Hello and welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian Insight number 75. I'm Steve Litchfield, and with me I have...
Rafe Bamford.
And Ewan Spence.
They're in Scotland, as always. Okay, we have some bits of news and some things which might provoke talking points. First of all, the news, though, new hardware, Nokia E72. Rafe, you're the big E71 fan, so what's new in the E72?
So the E72, as you rightly say, upgrade to the E71. And actually, I've been pleasantly surprised with quite how much has been changed. The underlying feature is that it's S60 third edition feature pack 2. That's up from feature pack 1. That means all kinds of performance improvements, but a lot of it's under the hood in terms of usability, things like the middle soft key, firmware updates over the air with user data preservation. But it's also in the performance terms. You'll get better speed out of the device and better battery life. It's also in the software architecture. There's out of the box support for things like web runtime, OpenC. So it's also more accessible for programmers to use some of the most recent technologies from Nokia. The keyboard's been redesigned slightly. It's actually got more in common with the E63. The spacebar's been shrunk and two extra keys added in. But I think probably the highlight from the functional point of view is the addition of what Nokia are calling the OptiNavi key, which is basically a touchpad in the centre of the D-pad that allows you to just flick your finger across it like a trackpad on a laptop to scroll up and down or round a page. So that's going to be particularly useful when going up and down email lists or browsing in the web browser, and perhaps also for navigating around maps. They have also redesigned some of the control cluster area in terms of it's now made of aluminium anodized into different colors with a sort of etching of the one-touch keys. So a really nice tweak there on the design side of things. I think it looks even nicer than the E71. There's also one big change on the back, and that's an upgrade from the 3.2 megapixel camera to a 5 megapixel camera. So there's quite a lot going for this device in terms of the updates. I think it's also worth mentioning that the messaging software has been improved. When we first saw the E71, we loved the new contact in the calendar software, but we're a bit disappointed nothing had been done with mail. Since that launched a year ago today, in fact, Nokia Messaging's come along, Mail for Exchange has been improved. Many of these changes have been rolled into the E71. So you've got a new email client experience which is based off Nokia Messaging, but also integrates solutions from Lotus Notes and from Microsoft Exchange. So it's a vast improvement. I'd say it's more desktop-like in one sense. There's support for folders in Exchange, for example, and generally better integration with the Exchange server. If you're using things like Gmail, Yahoo Mail, or your ISP email, that will also become push email thanks to Nokia Messaging. And the nice thing is with this device, Nokia Messaging, which will be a paid service on some devices, you get a free lifetime subscription. And there's one final piece of hardware change that's worth mentioning, and that's the addition of a magnetometer or a compass. That's in addition to the GPS, which significantly improves the mapping and navigation experience. So all in all, I think the software change is perhaps the most significant, but there are some really nice hardware tweaks in there as well.
Yeah, it certainly looks pretty tempting. The quarter three, by the way, is coming out, so probably another 2 or 3 months before we'll see it on the streets. The Nokia 5530 was a bit of a surprise. Very few of us expected this to be launched yesterday. It's essentially a cut-down version of 5800, but in some senses it's rather more appealing. It's a stainless steel frame, for example. In terms of the differences to the 5800, it's the same touch S60 5th edition tablet. It's quite a bit cheaper. Its launch price is quoted at, what's it, Rafe, about...
200 euros, which I think is probably the most significant thing about this device.
Yeah, it certainly looks pretty tempting, Rafe. Also launched yesterday, a bit of a surprise, the Nokia 5530. Touchscreen, music-centric smartphone at 200 euros. This is very much a little sister to the... to the 5800 Express Music. Strangely, looking at the photos, it doesn't look out of place. That everything's smaller, the screen's 2.9 inches rather than 3.2. Everything looks just very stylish and very natural. The big downgrade in terms of specs is there's no 3G connectivity. But you have got Wi-Fi, you have got Edge, you've got GPRS, of course. There's also no integrated GPS. I'm guessing, Rafe, that this sort of a cut down 5800 is perhaps for other markets other than the UK and the USA?
I think it's probably fair to say there's definitely a strong emphasis on emerging markets, places like China and India, for a device like this, because 200 euros is a really impressive price for this kind of device. I mean, there isn't really equivalent from Nokia's competitors. But you could perhaps see it coming into the UK market as maybe on the pay-as-you-go market, on prepay, or a sort of a really budget option. But as you say, taking out 3G in particular is going to make it probably less attractive to the more mature markets, because operators like that kind of thing because it's sort of additional revenue streams.
Yeah, it's certainly significantly smaller and lighter than the 5800. I mean, it really is phone size rather than small smartphone size. It's only 13 mil thick and 104 mil long, so that's a good 10% down on the 5800. Also of interest is the 5530 has got a more advanced home screen. The 5800's home screen, as people will know, I've ranted about it being a bit of a mess with an either-or options for contacts or shortcuts. The 5530 has a nice integrated 20-person contact carousel and application shortcuts, and it all looks very nicely implemented. I'm very much hoping this does appear on the 5800, and I can't see why they shouldn't, given that this is a lesser device. Incidentally, in related news, before I lose my train of thought, the 5800 does have a firmware upgrade that's somewhat imminent, V30, and I'm very much hoping that the 5530's home screen makes it into that particular release. Ewan, you've been watching the launch of these two devices, E72 and 5530. Do you fancy either of them?
I like the look of the 5530. To be honest, I'm really enjoying the 5800, and I think people have seen me grow into it over the period of the video cast back in March. The thing that seems to have caught my eye on this phone is that touchscreen, because it doesn't appear to have any physical hang-up or call buttons, whereas the 5800 does. It looks like the touchscreen extends all the way along. And if that's true, one, it makes it look a little bit sexier, but two, it also reduces the build cost. It takes away three physical switches and replaces it with that larger touchscreen, and it also gives that very flush look on the front of the screen. And I'm with you, Steve. I think this is clearly targeted in emerging markets, but to be honest, I think this would actually go down really well in the UK. How many times have you lost your phone to your daughter, for example? This would be a great phone for her, I feel, because it's got the Wi-Fi for around at home. It's not going to run. Okay, it doesn't have 3G, but I think you could live with that quite happily. It's quite small. It comes in a variety of colours. There's white, yellow, white, pink, black, grey, white, blue, black, red. So it's clearly aimed at that fashion sense. I mean, it's a pink phone. There we go. And I just think that, you know, it's got all those packages. And I'm wondering if this phone might not be for emerging markets. This phone might be used as an experiment to see if S60 can replace S40 in the very high volume, low impact market in terms of phone costs.
I imagine this device, the 5530, would be on contract at, you know, what did they do, £10 a month contracts, Rafe, or is 15 the minimum these days?
Well, you can get down to £5 contracts, but yes, I think on the £10 and £15 contracts, you would be paying, you know, it'll either be getting it free or for about £10. And, you know, it's worth really emphasizing that the price is a groundbreaking thing here. I mean, I actually agree with you guys. I think the design's significantly nicer than the 5800. It shows that, you know, a bit more thought has gone into it, like the speaker grills at either end of the device. You know, and just reducing that size slightly makes it feel less bulky in the pocket. And I do agree with Ewan that this is really, as OPK said at the beginning of the year, S60 was going to be pushed down into segments where it hadn't previously been. And this is clearly looking at replacing some of the S40 devices, you know. And Nokia doesn't have touchscreens on Series 40, yet touchscreens are becoming increasingly popular at the budget end of the market. So how is Nokia going to address that? Well, the only answer is to do it with S60. And I think if you look at this as a sort of a really great music playing device, let's not forget that the 5800 at the beginning of this year was the best selling music device in the UK. You can see something similar happening then, particularly at the youth end of the market. So although I said initially it's about emerging markets, I think, you know, with reflection, you could definitely consider it as something that will come in at the low end of the mid tier in, you know, places like the UK and throughout Western Europe.
Yeah, and in actual fact, as Ewan said, giving it to my daughter, I wouldn't actually want her to have 3G data. I'd want her to have strictly limited internet access away from the house where I could monitor her. So I'd be very happy with her basically just using it on Wi-Fi. And as you say, it might be pink, so she'd love it.
And let's not forget that, you know, this is Ovi service enabled. You know, the Ovi store will ship on this device with access to all those applications. You know, you won't have the GPS for maps, but you'll have access to the music store and some of the other Ovi services. And, you know, that really demonstrates the value of doing it on a platform. An S60 Nokia is really leveraging that to sort of create value in these lower-end products, which makes it stand out from the competition. And I actually think that in some ways the Ovi Service platform is more significant in these sort of mid-tier devices than it is right at the high end, where people tend to already have their own services that they prefer. You know, we're all on Gmail or use Flickr or whatever it happens to be, but people buying these devices may not have those services. They may not have a, you know, dedicated email account of their own, so they can get set up with Ovi Mail. And even if they do, you know, Nokia Messaging is a pretty strong solution on S65th edition. So I think, you know, Nokia created a very compelling and really outstanding value product in something like the 5530, continuing on from devices like the 5630, where the home screen comes from, incidentally. And I wouldn't hold my breath on the 5800 getting an updated home screen, by the way, Steve. But, you know, E63 as well. So as I say, you know, fantastic value.
Well, I'll just have to get 5530 instead then, Rafe. It should be noted that you don't get a plectrum with this new one, so frustrated guitarists will have to go and buy their own plectrums.
We'll probably have them lying around the house, Steve.
I know. Right, moving on with news. The N79, and I presume things like the N85 and N96 to come as well. N79 just have its version 30 firmware upgrade out, I think it was yesterday, Rafe. What's new in version 30?
Well, for the most part, it's a relatively small upgrade, although one of the things I have noticed is the integration of OviChat, and this is Nokia's instant messaging service. At the moment, that integrates with Google Talk, which is Google's own IM service. So it's a limited utility to a lot of people who are on AOL Messenger, Yahoo Messenger, or MSN. But I think we can anticipate that compatibility with those services will be added in due course. And that's partly as a result of the Oz Communications acquisition that Nokia had earlier this year. Last year.
Yeah, and as we've seen before, where the N79 goes, the N85 isn't far behind. I would expect the N85 to get an equivalent update.
Yes, I mean, OviChat will become standard. It's interesting to note that the N97 have it available as a software download, and I think we'll see it. OviChat will become standard on all devices, just as Nokia Messaging is becoming at the moment and Nokia Maps has over the last year.
Just to be clear, OviChat is now the new name for OviContact, so it's contacts with embedded chat, is that right?
That's right. What actually happens is OviChat is embedded within the contacts application on a separate tab. In due course, we're going to see a bit more of a merger between sort of Nokia Messaging and some of OviChat's features, and so there'll be a more seamless integrated experience between the address book and messaging, and OviChat will be part of that. Indeed, sort of the roadmap for Nokia Messaging shows that instant messaging or OviChat will be integrated within that whole messaging experience, you know, the idea of a unified inbox. Quite how and when that will be implemented remains to be seen. But yes, the emphasis is definitely not on the standalone application and very much on integration with the sort of existing application within the phone, and that's obviously contacts and messaging.
Okay, I'll just give Rafe a break from speaking for a moment. Ewan, just moving on to some reset generation N-Gage news. It's now available for Mac and CentOS Linux. What on earth is CentOS Linux and how significant is this? I thought we were talking about N-Gage here.
Yeah, we are, but reset generation is one of those flagship games which is used partly as a loss leader by Nokia to show, look, we are serious in gaming. When Reset Generation came out on the N-Gage, there was also a Flash version that was available to run, or was it ActiveX controls? But it could run in the browser if you had certain hooks in the operating system. Now, those were available for Windows at the start, and Reset Generation was coded initially for Windows, so you could play it on websites, you could embed it into Facebook, for example, and you would be able to play it on your browser. The innovative feature was that you were playing with the same account that you played with on the N-Gage. So when you were playing someone, it didn't matter where you were playing. If they were playing on the phone and you were playing on the PC, or you were both on the PC or you were both on the phone, it didn't matter. You were still playing Reset Generation in that 240 by 320 size screen. In other words, it was a holistic approach to gaming. So the fact that they're continuing to develop this, it's now available for browsers under Mac OS and CentOS OS Linux. To be honest, I'm not quite sure what CentOS OS Linux is, but it's probably quite nice and probably very close related to the Mac OS as well. It's the fact that they're carrying on this holisticism, if that's a real word.
I don't think it is, Ewan, but do carry on.
Well, you know what I mean. Holisticism, yes. And they're bringing everything in. It's great to see that these games don't just die once they've been released. They carry on getting developed. And certainly Nokia and the first first-party games are actually getting that. It's unfortunate. I mean, if we look back at the Reset Generation review that I posted up, I actually said that this is what all Gengage games should be like, and it remains to be seen if Reset Generation would be the flag bearer that would pull everybody forward, or whether it would just be one isolated high peak. At the moment, with the focus on the OV store and gaming coming through that, I think Reset Generation is actually going to be the peak, as opposed to the general going over the top and leading the rest of the army.
Okay, all right, thanks, Ewan. Also released this week, Ovi Maps 3.0. There's a full release candidate out. This could be the one they actually released, but they've put it up for us all to try out. I know Rafe's been trying it out, and Rafe, it still runs, I gather, from, you have to install it via a PC utility. Will it still be like this when they finally release it, and can people who run Mac and Linux and install version 3.0?
Well, gazing into my crystal ball, it says uncertain. Because the reason they have to do it like this is because they're erasing old map data and replacing it and doing some upgrades apart from the application. Now, it may well be that this is the recommended way to do it, but they may also provide a route with a direct sys file for, as you say, Mac users. We'll have to wait and see. I think the other way that it may well come along is via a firmware update when people are doing updates in that way. And obviously it's going to be embedded on the new phones. OviMaps 3, the latest beta, it's a lot more stable than what we had previously. We've talked about some of the features before. It's things like satellite mapping, terrain mapping, a much improved sort of user experience and UI, so it's much easier to use if you're doing car or pedestrian navigation. Some of the highlights for me are just clearer directions on the screen when you are driving the car, but also the ability to rotate the map so you can have it always pointing in the right direction. The ability to see the map in 3D, which is particularly helpful, I find, when driving. When walking, I prefer the 2D version. In this new beta, one of the, I think, probably my favourite feature is the fact they've significantly streamlined the purchase of maps through the store. They've actually got rid of doing it via individual countries, and it's now in fairly generic regions. They're not quite continents, because they're in some areas, but in Europe it is. And if you've got a UK licence, it will upgrade you to a Europe-wide licence. The costs have also been reduced. It's about £50 for a year's licence for Europe, which previously would have just bought you one country. The walking licence is only £7, but most phones will actually come with that out of the box for free. There's also better traffic support, so that's things like being able to see where safety cameras or traffic cameras or speeding cameras are, and traffic information about congestion. That's limited to certain countries, but it's all been integrated very nicely. I mean, Maps 3 isn't perfect yet, but it's a big step forward from 2. And as you said, I think this is really a release candidate, because I've been looking at the N86, and that actually has Nokia Maps. In fact, I shouldn't be calling it Nokia Maps, because it is now Ovi Maps. That has Ovi Map 3 out of the box. So going forward, I think we can expect to see a lot more devices having Ovi Maps 3 as kind of the default version of Maps.
So Rafe, there is an installation file for Maps 3 floating around where people have extracted it for this latest release candidate. If we, somebody like myself, if I was to go onto the memory card and delete the cities file, the folder, and delete any obvious maps and voice commands, would I then be able to install that over the top of the current version 2, do you know?
Yes, that's right, Steve. It should work. I should stress I haven't tried this myself. There are a number of files on the memory card, including, I think, QF, cities, and maps. And if you delete all of those, you should be able to successfully upgrade. Obviously, you won't be able to use Map Loader, because that's also PC only. But you should be able to at least give Map 3.0 a go. And I would generally recommend it for those who want to be on the cutting edge. It is obviously still a beta, but it is a lot more stable than the previous beta from way back in February. And I'd anticipate sort of the final release coming within a month or so.
Yeah, I have to say, for people listening to this who perhaps want a tip and are worried about, you know, the compatibility with things like MapLoader, I have to say, when Nokia Maps was launched 2 years ago, MapLoader was seen as an essential because data was so expensive. And data has just been getting cheaper and cheaper and cheaper. And I can't really see even need, unless you plan to go abroad to an unknown country and you desperately want all the maps up there on Moment One, for most people can just let Nokia Maps grab data as needed over the air, and it's not going to cost an arm and a leg, and it'll save you a lot of storage on your memory card and a lot of hassle. And it
Steve, you hit the point there. You hit the point there when you go abroad, when you travel. There is no way that I mean, when I went to Moscow recently, I downloaded the map data beforehand. There is no way that I was going to let myself even switch on data roaming while I'm abroad. Because, you know, we've talked about the cost of roaming with data many times before. But this is one of those issues where, yes, you do want a map of an unknown place. You know roughly where you're going. Because the maps cover a large geographic area, you can download them and have them there. And you do need them when you get there on the spot. So there is a need for map loader, and there is a need for sideloading here. And not everybody outside of the Western world is granted with good, solid, well-priced 3G data connectivity.
Yeah, I think that's the big point. You know, not everyone has unlimited data. I'd actually say what I'd really like to see, and someone commented on this on the news story on All About Symbian, is a way of downloading the map data directly on the device. So you could go into a menu and say, I want to download all the UK map data to my phone. And, you know, only over a Wi-Fi connection would I be thinking about doing that. But rather than having to go through doing it on the PC and all of that, which is just an extra hassle, I like to be able to do everything without a PC in an ideal world.
Yes, that'd be pretty cool to go into an internet cafe, and go to Russia, for example, in Ewan's case, go into, flick on the Wi-Fi and say, right, I want all the maps for this part, for Moscow or this part of Russia, and download them over Wi-Fi. And Ewan's point is well made. Yes, if you're going abroad, then there are roaming implications which you need to find out from your network. I think I was more thinking of just going around your own country or your own region where your SIM card will work, in which case I just never bother map loading the UK. I just, wherever I drive, it downloads that appropriate map tile.
The other thing to consider, Steve, is, you know, these are vector-based maps, so the actual amount of space they take up isn't vast. So if you've got anything over a 4 GB memory card, I would say it's well worth downloading the data for your own country as well. It's not just about spotty reception, it's just about the speed with which it loads it. And if you want to browse around the map, say, to mark a new location, then it just makes things just a little bit quicker. That's less of an issue perhaps with the OviSync, which is the big thing, I guess, in Maps 3.0. You can also use OviMaps on the PC or the Mac and, you know, sync with your phone. That's such a fantastic feature. I've been using that a lot in the last few months. And, you know, I'm going off to London to an event launch or something like that. Just mark it up and it comes down onto my phone without having to think about it. But even so, there is still, especially now that the OviMaps 3 has better support for sort of shooting somewhere off a map, just being able to scroll around really quickly and have it load instantly, I think, is a big plus as well.
Okay, I give in, guys, I give in. You're right, you're right. Moving on, we've got a question in from James Berland, a good friend of the site, actually. He runs Nokia Creative. He says, there seems to be something of a backlash against the N97, reading the different N97 reviews around the ecosystem. Would you say that's fair? Has there been a backlash, and are you surprised? Rafe?
Oh, that's a tough question.
I'll ask you and then.
Well, I'll come up with an answer. Yes, I've read some of the negative reviews, and I think a lot of them have concentrated around the screen and the keyboard. But I think it's almost inevitable with a device like this that has been, you know, so anticipated and hyped in many areas that there are going to be people that are disappointed. But to my mind, it's still one of the best devices that Nokia produced recently. Addressing specific concerns, the QWERTY keyboard, I think the thing is people were expecting a full layout because of the form factor. It isn't as good as it could be, but I've been using it, and I've had less problems than Steve had with it, and he noted in his review. Perhaps I've been using it sort of two-thumb style most of the time. And the screen, yes, it doesn't match up to some of the capacitive screens, I actually don't think the difference is noticeable as people have been making out. It's pretty good condition, viewing conditions when you're outside, very good when you're inside, and it's more sensitive than the 5800. So, you know, actually having compared it to devices like the HTC Magic and the iPhone, you know, side by side, I find it difficult to see that most people will really find that a big difference. And I think sort of the headline features with the, you know, the 5 megapixel camera, the really good mapping support, and the home screen, really the features that set it apart, and they make far more of a difference to the purchase decision, I think, than a QWERTY keyboard, which is good enough, not perfect, I'd admit, and a screen which I would say is pretty good without necessarily being outstanding.
Right then, so the question, are we surprised at the backlash? No. A little bit of a contrast there between Rafe and my answer. But Rafe's addressed all the technical points and why on why the reviews are how they are. But again, this is part of expectation management. This device, we talk as the flagship. We say, well, it should have everything. The perception from even from us is that it should have a little bit more memory. It should be doing the best of the best. It should be right up there. Let's not forget, this is just another N series device. It can be labeled as a flagship, but people are going to be looking at it and thinking it's the next coming of Nokia. It's silver. It's touchscreen. It's got a keyboard. There is no perfect device out there ever, not even a Cyan 5MX. But there are people out there who believe that there should be a perfect device. And whenever something comes along, it will not measure up. And let's also not forget that we're talking about the top 1% of the top 1% of the top 1% of people who write online, who write these technology sites. 10 technology sites around the world goes, the, you know, whatever device is a bit rubbish and not like what we thought it would be when we were dreaming about it 3 months ago, and all of a sudden the device gets a bad rep. I mean, that is just ridiculous. Nokia are probably going to sell on the order of tens of millions of this device over the period of 12 months. And why the views of 10 people writing their first impression on having played with it for an hour or two, and All About Simi is no exception, those are opinions, but they're not set in stone. It's not what the market demands. Look at the 5800, the amount of people that just dismiss that, yet it's one of the largest selling DAP players. It's one of the biggest selling smartphones out there. We talk for a very, very small time about a device that shouldn't influence its entire year's career.
I think that's right. You know, commercial reality is not equal geek expectation. And you can see exactly the same things happen with the Palm Pre and the iPhone 3GS. You know, the cynic and people go, why have you called it the iPhone 3G speed? Does that mean there's something wrong with the original device? I mean, of course, that's a fairly ridiculous thing, but I've seen comments like that. And I think the N97 is no exception. And yes, it's about expectation management. But it's also, Nokia is a very smart manufacturer. And with the N97, yes, they've created a very powerful and compelling device. No, it's not the most powerful and compelling device it could be. But there's a balance between feature set and cost and price. And you could meet the demands of a small group of people, but it would only meet the demands of those small group and it would be too expensive for others. So Nokia meets it halfway. And I think that's what Nokia's been so good at over the years and why it's still the, you know, biggest seller of smartphones in the mobile market.
I mean, there's precedence to this. So let's first of all take commercial realities. Adding in one extra button on one of these devices, when you look at the amount of phones that are built, significantly increases your cost for very little extra return. Secondly, Nokia have already built a communicator-like device that served a specific market that had everything that that market needed, and it was the original Nokia Communicator 9000. And at the time, that retailed for £1,000 SIM-free. Now, that would be the equivalent nowadays, I guess, of around £1,700 to £1,800 SIM-free for a communicator device. The Nokia N97 is a quarter of that price. It has to address mass market concerns. It cannot be the perfect device for the top 1% of the 1% of the 1% of people writing tech blogs.
The top 1%, that's the 0.0001. Are we so niche? Are we so ultra geeky, Ewan?
Yeah. Are we so niche? Are we so not yet forsooth forsaken with our technology that stabs me? Is this not a Wi-Fi connection I see before me? Tis not the slings and 3G through my heart with the edge. Can we get off quickly, because I'm going to get stuck on Shakespeare 2.0 here.
Need I remind you that we're on a podcast talking about high-end mobile phones. Yes, we're definitely not top 0.1% of geeks.
Yeah, that's why I wanted to throw in some Shakespeare.
Staying on the subject of high-end smartphones, time for one more item, the N95 Classic. We've all had one. We've all loved them. I still love mine to bits. People have touted various other devices. The N97, for one, is a possible spiritual successor to the N95 Classic, but I don't really see that. They're different form factors, different markets. But we've now had the N86 in the house, or in Rafe's house specifically. And could this be, it's been growing on me, could it be the spiritual successor to the N95, Rafe?
Yes, I think it could be. In fact, I'm going to go out on a limb, get off the fence, which I know all the listeners really like me doing, and say I think that the N86 8 megapixel is the best consumer smartphone with a non-touchscreen device. It really is a very, very good device. Just to go over some of the points very quickly, it retains the classic double slide multimedia computer form factor as the N95 and the N96 and the N85, but it just adds a extra degree of maturity. There aren't in some ways that many technical changes. There's a big change in the back on the camera, which I'll talk about in a moment, but it's still sort of the basic S60 third edition feature pack 2. It's a QVGA screen, but it's been very polished in terms of software. You know, you've got the latest version of Ovi Maps, you've also got the music support, the web browser, Engage, and a whole bunch of rearranged software. It's got the classic things like 3.5mm audio jack, USB charging. But what I really like about it is just the design and the materials feel really nice in the hand. This is extremely good quality build quality. I'd say amongst the best of the N series. You know, I'd draw a parallel with the N97, with which it shares a sort of design language. Significant step up from the N85, the N96, and especially the N95 Classic, which, as we know, could develop a ropey slider at times. There isn't actually any metallic on it, which is unusual for something. I think the materials are really great, though. It's sort of the hard plastics, and it's just a comfortable feel in the hand. It is quite a heavy device, but I think an awful lot of people who don't want to go onto touchscreens, which I think is a perfectly acceptable thing, and indeed, you know, touchscreens are a relatively recent thing, and they're still a minority in the mobile market. They are going to obviously be very important, but it's just a really very nice device. The camera is kind of a standout technical feature. Nokia really invested a lot of time in making this better. It's things like the Carl Zeiss optics, a mechanical shutter, a variable aperture, and the results from the initial testing I've been doing are very promising indeed, particularly in low light conditions and particularly with still images. This is definitely a step up from what we've had before, and I think this is going to be one of the best camera phones on the market for 2009. And it's certainly deserving of the TIPA award that it got recently. So there'll be a lot more coverage of this on the site. I'm going to be handing it off to Steve to take a detailed look at some of the multimedia performance. But yes, from my certainly from my initial impressions, I've been playing with it for about a day or so now. It's a very promising device. And yes, I think a spiritual successor to the N95 is a very nice way of putting it. You know, it doesn't stand out quite as much as the N95 did. There's so much more competition around. Touch has come in. But this is a very solid phone, and it's very capable. And I think at £400, which is the launch price, it's also better value than some of the previous sort of high-end N-series devices.
Yeah. Well, I'm very much looking forward to receiving that. And as you've also got the N97, I'm getting rather jealous of the phone portfolio at Shea Blandford. So I'm glad to be relieving you of at least one of the cutting-edge devices. I think we've run out of time for this podcast, so I'm going to say goodbye. Also, goodbyes from
me, Rafe Blandford.
And myself, Ewan Spence.
And we'll try and keep the Shakespeare down a tad next week. See you guys.